A few weeks ago, just before the UK joined a number of other countries in lockdown, Barr Jacobs interviewed Karen Nelson Field, Executive Director of Amplified Intelligence, at the launch in London of her book The Attention Economy and How Media Works. Barr talks to Karen about the important contribution her approach makes to a better understanding of the issues around viewability, clutter, reach and frequency, and of the relationship between attention and sales.
I'm joined today by Karen Nelson Field, the founder and principal of Amplified Intelligence, the Australian-based company specialising in measuring the attention, people's attention to media forms and to ads within media forms. So, hi, Karen.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Karen, could you perhaps start off? I know you've been kind enough to do these interviews for us before, but could you perhaps start off a little by explaining to the audience how you do this work, so the methodology that you use?
Sure. I mean, it's evolved over 3 years, so. But in a nutshell, we have quite an intricate, technology stack. I feel like the best way to describe it is if you're a panel member, you would download our app. We would either send you to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Bevod, whichever Twitter we've done. You would log in as yourself. We don't collect your personal information. You then use that platform for the desired time. So, for example, whatever is normal on average for that platform. So let's go back to Instagram. It's 10 minutes. Within that, we have JavaScript that sits behind the ad, which means we can tell how the duration of time that the ad is on screen, how many pixels are on screen, whether you turn the phone and orientate it horizontally, whether the sound is on and how high or low. Then the two important things are we can also intercept ad load, meaning we can pull ads out, we can replace them with test ads. And this is a good thing because it means that if you're testing two different platforms, not two different creative types, we can actually put the same creative across multiple platforms and ensure that viewers see the same creative. Mm-hmm. And the second most important thing is that we also then switch on the camera, the front-facing camera of the phone, when an ad loads. So what that does is it takes facial footage and essentially... It gets sent back to our stack and it's transposed from attention score. So it's essentially gaze. So we're modelling out facial trajectory, where you're looking, if you're looking at the phone and if you're looking at the ad specifically or if you're not looking at all. And then finally, depending on the test, we might send you to a store and you get to choose from the store depending on the brands that we're testing. So what we end up having is we have this single source data of actual viewing, actual exposure, how many pixels, spatial clutter, sound, whether you've actually looked at it or not, and whether you've bought.
Oh, it's very interesting. Do you find, or do you notice, that different creative treatments work differently on different platforms, as it were? So is it always a good thing to have the same creative on two different platforms, or is it better if people have?
So bear in mind what I've just explained is a research procedure. Right, so the short answer is different creative does work differently on different platforms, but the reason why we do that is because we're isolating the impact of the creative to test the effectiveness of the platform.
Right.
If we were going to do a different scenario, we could test creative as well, but creative testing is not our thing.
No.
We're kind of more ecosystem platform effectiveness researchers than creative testing.
And do you then draw comparisons of that, let's say, with TV as a media form? And how do you come to do that?
Because we actually also have, so this app can be downloaded on any device, or iOS device, I should say, and we can send you a tripod, a small one, and you can actually place it in front of your television so we can still collect the same footage. We stream the programming. You get to choose which programming. We stream programming to your TV, and it's the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
So actually we use the same model, and we can do both mobile and TV.
Mm-hmm. And you notice, presumably, that there's a, I don't know from the work you've done in the past, that there's a sort of size of screen effect, isn't there? So, you know, the bigger the screen, the greater the impact and the greater the attention.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. That is true, but the distance from your face changes things. So, you know, obviously, if you have a mobile and you've got it, you know, I'm wearing glasses right now, so if you've got it really close to your face, you're a lot more engaged in trying to understand what is in front of your face than if you're, say, 5 feet from something and there's a lot of work. There's a lot of, you know, things going on, dogs, cats, children.
Noise happening. So, I mean, so what you're basically doing is you're looking at the attention that people, in a nutshell, you're looking at the attention that people are paying to the screen.
So that footage that I mentioned, as you said, goes back to our internal models and it transposes to an attention score. And we can tell on a second by second, it's actually 5 frames per second, whether you are watching or not watching, or whether you're looking at the screen and not at the ad itself. So the insights that we've been able to get over the last 3 years have been amazing, and we are seeing consistent patterns. So, in fact, I was asked this morning, do you find that attention changes across countries? Not really. People still dip in and out. I think one of the big findings is advertisers should understand that people are not devoted to ads, right? So when you pay attention, even in the first few seconds, it's quite likely that you dip in and out for the rest of it. So, you know, advertisers shouldn't expect sustained and undivided attention.
No. I mean, people always in this business always think, of course, that the greatest thing in consumers' lives is the advertising, and actually they have very little interest.
Well, that's what our data shows us too.
Yes, it's depressing to think
about. Well, it is depressing, but at the end of the day, you know, there are things you can do to improve your odds. Part of that is about what platforms you use and the types of platforms that foster viewability, for example, duration, and then there's creative things you can do. So in our data, we can see, you know, certain triggers make you sort of jump, or, you know, unexpected attention. So you sort of, if something was particularly loud or bright or unexpected, you would pay unintentional
attention.
It's hard to say.
Do you notice, I mean, is relevance important?
That's a good question. So we, in the last study with Dentsu Global, started to look at in the wild. Now, we call in the wild, we haven't touched the ad at all, whereas normally, as I said, we would replace it. But when we test in the wild, we can see that there, I mean, obviously, we assume that, particularly on social platforms, that the ads are always targeted, but that is a strong bow because you don't really know that. But we do see that there is slightly increased attention than when we feed ads through. But there's more work to be done there. But, you know, my hypothesis would be absolutely there will be.
It's interesting. I mean, relevance is seen as a very desirable thing, and personalisation and all of that. It's obviously a big discussion around the media business at the moment. And there seems to be two sides of the same coin. On the one hand, you've got relevance, and people want to see stuff that's relevant to them and, you know, particularly appropriate to them, and they're interested in it or whatever. But at the same time, people express concern that perhaps they're being stalked or followed or, you know, whatever.
Surveilled.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you find that? Does that come out from anything that you've done with you?
Well, we don't talk to the panel member, to be honest. So everything's pretty private. So we don't even see the footage. So we don't have any contact with the panel member. We haven't asked questions like that. So I can't honestly answer that one.
So how many countries are you doing?
We've done it in 6 so far, and they've been large. We've got it in 3 at the moment. But the plan is actually to build the first ever mobile ongoing panels. We're going to call it a mobile attention trace in 3 countries very soon. So the goal will be to have ongoing longitudinal panels that we can dip in and out, and we can test their attention and not interrupt what they're doing.
Yeah. And how many people on the panel?
Well, at the moment,
thousands. Yeah.
So it varies. So at the moment, we have been doing fairly large scale bespoke work. So we've tested it across 120,000 abuse 6 countries, and it's been working really well. So we're ready to kind of crank it up a bit and go from there.
So you're working directly with advertisers. I know you're doing stuff with agencies as well, but are you also doing stuff with advertisers?
We have, yes. So some of it's embargoed. Mm-hmm. So we've done a combination of brands and with agencies, mm-hmm. and we also have worked with advertising associations,
right.
both in the UK, in the EU and in Australia.
And have you done any work to look at how this fits or how your scores fit as a some sort of predictor of sales or predictor of results of some sort?
Yeah, I mean, that's a long question if you've got 30 minutes. look, at the end of the day, you know our background, we're trained quantitative researchers, right? So for me, I'm not a seller of something if I don't believe it.
Mm.
So my credibility relies on it. So we did a whole lot of testing in the first 3.5 years to understand whether brand choice was related to attention, and it is, but not perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at first I was stressing about that because, you know, how can we be happy that attention is a good measure if it's not perfectly related? And what we've worked out is that because there are so many different variables at play. So we, you know, you don't know when someone's in the market to buy, you don't know if they've bought before, advertising's not persuasive, most of the time the brands are actually quite poorly branded. So when they do watch, they don't even know it's you. But the short answer is absolutely, we see categorically that there's an impact.
Yeah, you would think there would be. I mean, if someone's paying attention to something, they're more likely to be engaged.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a good point because attention, so we have to, as marketers, kind of understand that just because we see something doesn't mean we're processing,
mm-hmm.
right? So you and I are talking quite closely and we're concentrating on what each other's saying and we're, you know, looking at each other. But, you know, when you're kind of looking around sort of fairly subconsciously, it doesn't always mean you're processing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, humans are complex.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly there's a lot of work done, isn't there, on how ads communicate and whether or not they communicate using the sort of system one methodology or system one theories to say that, you know, they immediately recognise something and it gets through to them fast and they therefore do something as a result of it versus a sort of system two approach, which is much more sort of rational and thinking through the, you know, whatever the, you know, it might be a promotional offer or something that's at the end of the day something you need to look at carefully and consider. As opposed to an immediate...
Yeah, I mean, I think they're two very different sides of thinking. You know, I come from the work, you know, I was trained at Aaron Bass, so for me, I kind of look at that and go, buying is fairly habitual and rational, and there's statistical norms that sit behind that. So, you know, System 1 and I probably are not friends.
You think it's more irrational?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sort of processes.
Yeah, and you can see that in the data for about 70 years.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel. And that doesn't really appeal to many people who are in the creative business.
Mm. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to ask you was about how you see this. I mean, at the moment there's a big worry or a big concern in the media world that everything that we do is tending to become sort of commoditized. You know, say, an impression is an impression is an impression, which we all know perfectly well isn't true, but, you know, we've sort of grabbed hold of this word impression and sort of suggested that it's the same thing, whatever the circumstance, whatever the media form. Whereas what you're doing, of course, is at the exact opposite end of the scale, because you're looking at what people are taking out from it, the attention they're paying to something. Do you see these two things sort of coming together? Do you see some of your work ultimately becoming like a way of making the currencies more accurate and more meaningful to people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, reach and frequency, impressions is going to be the baseline. You know, you can't change a currency in 5 minutes. But what we're finding is the work we're doing and the data that we provide adds what they call a validation layer or a weighting layer. And it's new. Like, there's a few leaders in the pack. So we've talked about Dentsu. I'm quite proud to say they really are applying it across their models. But, you know, it is a big ask for advertisers to make change, but at the same time, advertisers are calling for change. So what this data does is it doesn't replace your reach and frequency, right? it sets a baseline across the platforms and makes each platform accountable and makes it more universal. So it kind of takes away, I guess, the measurement from the platform and kind of puts it back on the human, really.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, actually, because at the moment, of course, we're faced with a situation where, because we're using the same word to describe things, like the word impression, we kind of are falling into the trap of assuming it's always the same thing, and we know perfectly well that it isn't. Whereas what you're doing is something, as you said, you bring it back to the human. It's a very good word,
really. Well, I feel like it's fairer, then.
Okay, well, Karen, thank you so much for putting the time and
talking. Thank you for having me.
And it's fascinating to talk to you, and I hope we will see you on our AirSci platform very soon.
Thank you.
Cheers.